So welcome to the Loop Podcast. I'm Ryan Green, your host, and I'm excited to have Tu Bang with us, the Senior Director of Marketing at iPromise. Thanks for coming to our new office in Clayton.
Yeah, and that's exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Love to just kind of start with your background. I think our viewers would love to hear your experience. You've been in the industry for a while here in St. Louis. Tell me about your background and your journey to iPromise.
So I've been in marketing for about 15 years. I started out with Johnson & Johnson Vision Care based out of Florida. So this is actually my second tour in Vision Care working at iPromise, but I was there for about 5 years. Came back to St. Louis, which is where I grew up. Spent about 8 years at Energizer in a variety of different roles and capacities. And then for the past 2 years, I've been at iPromise, so second tour, if you will. So I've worked in medical device, I've worked in CPG, now I'm working in ocular nutrition. But my roots are actually in research. So I started out as a scientist working in early stage drug development. And then decided after spending lots of days in a lab that I would be really challenged if, 50 years went by. And I worked in very early stage drug development. So the thought of spending 50 years in research and not actually helping people was too much for me. So went to grad school and then have spent the last 15 years growing up in marketing.
It's always really interesting the path that people take to get into marketing. And it's usually not a linear one. There's some stops along the way. How do you think your experience with being in a research lab, not seeing the light for days at a time, how does that inform the way that you think about biomedical devices, and as you got into ocular, how does the science inform what you do from the marketing side?
So a couple of things on that. One, I love, while it wasn't off the beaten path, it was great from the standpoint that, like, those skill sets, that critical thinking, that analytical horsepower that I had a chance to, work and hone really has served me well in my marketing career path. And so if I think about, today, what do I think the best marketers, what are some of those skill sets and what are those competencies that great marketers bring to the table? It's, things like having balanced creative and analytical horsepower, being able to think with a big picture orientation, but also be able to think through the detail, having attention to detail. And then being both brand and commercially minded as a marketer, because both aspects are really important. So when I think about, those skill sets that I learned way back when in my research days, I love that I've been able to utilize that not only in kind of like the day-to-day marketing, but even thinking through, at J&J, I worked on the Acuvue contact lens brand. And so we worked with R&D and there were clinical studies that we had to work through. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to have a different level conversation with R&D because of my background. And even here, and then I take it to the marketing side of things. Like, I can read a study and I read beyond the abstract. I can read it cover to cover and I can pull out, things that I think are maybe meaningful and relevant to consumers that may not have necessarily served as like kind of the big aha in the research. So it's served me well in a lot of different ways. But I genuinely do believe today more so than ever, to be a good marketer, you need to be able to think critically and analytically and be comfortable in data.
And traditionally, a lot of marketing came in from a creative side, probably from more of a right-brained mentality. And I absolutely agree. You need somebody that's very balanced to be both a generalist and a specialist at the same time, to be able to dive into minutia, but then be able to pull back out and say, what does this mean for brand?
Yeah.
What does this mean for the consumer sentiment and the interaction that they're having? And interesting that you kind of talked about brand versus commercialization. That seems to be a really hot topic right now within the trades. Is
it really?
It is. how much to focus on brand building with the pressure of quarterly earnings reports and VCs that want their money back. And that, how do you look at that dichotomy of how important, how do you value a brand? How do you show, how do you quantify the brand experience, what the value that has for the business versus sales and what's happening today and what happened this month and the pressure of reporting back to that? How do you achieve that balance?
It's definitely a balance. I think depending on the size of the company, you know, having worked at really, really large companies and now working at a smaller company, you know, being public versus private, mm-hmm. there's a lot of different dynamics that play into how you need to consider both of those aspects, but they're both important, right? Like you've got to have both. Like you can't have a brand that doesn't bring in revenue. Mm-hmm. And if you have revenue and you don't have a brand, like
you don't have
it's
a future.
Easier. It's easier. It's easier for competition to take you down. You know, like the brand, I think, helps provide long-term, like focusing on brand and building your brand provides long-term longevity. Like it gives you, a path in the future. Mm-hmm. And it also, I think, helps justify the price that consumers pay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot of work, right? There's a ton of work about brand valuation. And there's lots of lists that come out every single year about, mm-hmm. you know, how much a brand is worth. And so, you know, not all companies, again, you know, a company the size of iPromise is going to have the resources to figure out what that means. But intuitively, even within a small company, I think we appreciate that we have a brand and we have a brand that we need to continue to grow. We need to continue to expand awareness for, and there's, you know, we partner with agencies like CoID in order to do that. But, you know, there's the reality of the quarterly meetings and there's, you know, those expectations are real as well. So it's finding the balance in both of that and also, you know, having mutual understanding across the organization that both are important.
There's a spreadsheet imperative, certainly. But the value of the brand, while not being as tangible, is something that can come up in price, right?
Oh, 100%.
Certainly in how you price your product, the emotional appeal.
Yeah.
Even like Net Promoter Score probably has something to do with the way that somebody feels about the brand and the product. Even if you go into the stock market and you take a look at Nike and you take a look at how much it should be valued and how much it's actually trading for, the gap is how much their brand is valued, right?
Yes.
How much that swoosh is really worth.
Isn't that amazing?
It
I
is.
Get so excited looking at things like that because again, there's lots of ways to calculate it. There's lots of algorithms and lots of agencies who publish lists about, you know, valuation of different brands. But I mean, at the end of the day, if nothing else, it's a testament that brands matter.
Being able to showcase the value of the brand, being able to quantify it as much as you can, so that you can talk to the CFO and be able to have a marketing conversation with them, to be able to talk to your chief medical officer and be able to have a conversation with them about what their research and what is doing towards the brands, incredibly important.
I mean, and you also think about our business, we go to market in a number of different channels. So we have eye doctors and we have our DTC efforts with Amazon and Walmart. And we, you know, we sell on our own website, and then we have sports and we have, you know, professional and collegiate teams. Mm-hmm. And so within all of that, you know, as we continue to expand our footprint, the fact that we have an established brand, the fact that we, you know, we've been around for 20 years and we are, you know, the number one most recommended ocular nutrition brand amongst optometrists plays in sports. And so, like, you know, for instance, when we were at the PGA Golf Show last week, you know, folks would come into our booth, they would have a conversation with us. And the fact that we're an established brand that in a different space played really well. And so there's to your point about brands being important. It's important, you know, in how you exist today, but it's also important as you think about how you extend your brand in the future. Yeah.
And having that, those core thousand fans, right, is something that it's talked about quite a bit on the internet. You don't need to have a million followers. You need to have a thousand people that will react and be your super fans, right? And you have that with the relationship that you have with optometrists.
Yeah.
And that can cascade into the relationship you have with professional athletes who trust those optometrists, right? And then that cascades to consumer, right? And I think you can really see that as you look at what your D2C efforts look like, right? And maybe this is a good time to talk about what you're doing with Amazon, right? Because I think that you're doing an amazing job with that channel. That's one of several channels that you all focus on. Can you talk about your relationship with Amazon, how you view your product and positioning there, and some of the tips and tricks that people may that are watching this may want to learn from your success there?
Well, so I want to say that we started selling on Amazon prior to me joining. So I've been with the company 2 years. I want to say it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I think like a lot of companies who start by selling on Amazon, like I think you put it up there and then, you know, you think that everyone will come.
Yeah.
And
suddenly you're in the largest marketplace in the world.
All boats will rise and you just stick it out there. And and so, you know, I think we've gone up that learning curve over the last couple of years. But, you know, we've certainly hit our stride. We brought on a dedicated resource to focus on Amazon growth. He, you know, had demonstrated success in other categories, specifically on Amazon. Mm-hmm. He's been here also for 2 years. Over the past 2 years, we've grown 10% and then 19% respectively. So,
awesome.
You know, we continue to post very strong results in that channel. And I think, you know, some of it is simple things like getting the basics right. You know, like having A+ content, having solid imagery, having solid descriptions, making sure, you know, and, you know, my lens kind of seeing across all of the channels is to make sure that there's cohesion and consistencies across the different channels in which we compete, because it's very, you know, plausible that consumers are also patients who see their eye doctors, who may talk about, you know, ocular nutrition. They may talk about it, but they may not necessarily purchase it in the doctor's office, but they may go home and do some research on it, and they may think about it and end up in an Amazon marketplace. And so my lens is making sure that there's consistency and integration across those channels. But, you know, within Amazon specifically, resourcing for it, getting the basics right, you know, again, so A+ content, reviews, having the right assortment.
Reviews are incredibly important.
They are. And I mean, I think the other thing alongside that is staying on top of it. You know, like having a dedicated resource allowed us the ability to have somebody who's just on top, who lived in it day in and day out. And so, you know, knowing the algorithm, knowing what the algorithm rewards, reviews is a huge piece of that. You know, solid, steady sales records are a huge piece of that.
And knowing when competition's bidding on you or dupes are coming in, so many things that do need human eyeballs and need that dedication and need somebody who's really grinding it out there.
Well, and even, I mean, with that, like, that, you know, I think when I think about like the marketing cycle, and I'll park, you know, DTC for a minute, you go through the marketing planning process, you get into the year, and you know, you may pivot a little bit here or there, but Amazon's so dynamic, and you have to have a different mentality in DTC and specifically in Amazon. And so to your point, like, you know, staying on top of it and having a test and learn mentality throughout that process helps you understand, like, you know, where are there incremental pockets for growth? You know, like, how do you capitalize on the fact that your competition is down? They go down for some reason, and you're able to, you know, swoop in because you're on top of it. And then, you know, last but not least, like certainly a shout out to the COAGI team, like having an agency partner who has demonstrated success in the Amazon ecosystem is really important because, you know, when you have a dedicated resource, it, you know, from a brand perspective, when you have a dedicated resource, you have somebody who lives it and breathes it. But by the same token, you need kind of that outside perspective, mm-hmm. And that outside partner who has your back, who is also, you know, has connective tissue into the ever-changing digital landscape, knows sure. what's coming down the pike, knows when there's new things like, you know, the, what is it? Advantage Plus shopping tactics that COAGI brought forward, like huge, you know, incremental source of revenue for the Amazon business last year that I don't think we would have known to think about testing until you guys brought it forward. So
I think one of the things that make great agency brand partnerships in the D2C and e-commerce space is replicating what is successful in one channel and being able to bring those to multiple channels, right? Yeah. Some things we were able to augment and help your dedicated resource with, but our goal was how can we take the success that you had here and replicate those in so many different new emerging channels, whether it's with Advantage Plus Shopping,
social, commerce. Yeah.
You know, as we're looking at retail media, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and for smaller businesses, you got to make some smart bets on what that next one's going to be, mm-hmm. right? We could recommend 40 different places at this point, right?
Yeah.
What's going to drive sales immediately, but what's also going to expand that audience as we move from that optometrist to professional sports to broader consumers, right? And choosing the channel of that next layer of the onion is going to be focused on. I think that's been it's really been exciting to see that collaborative process.
This past year, right? Like when we had success in Amazon, we worked on, you know, we were focused on golf. So we tried to take that same, you know, that model or pieces of that model and apply it to other channels. And we had success within that as well. So it is, it's super nice to be able to replicate mm-hmm. success across a number of different channels.
And one of the tactics that we decided on was going into influencer, right? That was new for you all. And we wanted to have both a brand and commercial experience with that. And one of the first influencers we talked to was Let's Play Through, who had a really nice placement in his top
annual
products.
Buying guide.
Yeah, his annual buying guide right at Black Friday, where it felt very natural because he's going through a variety of products he's recommended, being able to recommend iPromise as the top supplement within golf there.
Yeah.
Describe the impact that Let's Play Through and that influencer activation had, both for uplifting the brand and for the business. Is that I think one of the goals we had in particular with golf, which is an opportunity and a challenge, is, you know, you guys are a premium product.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at golf as an audience that would be willing to buy a premium product.
Yeah.
They also have a lot of premium products that they're being advertised to at the same time.
Yes.
They got the Rolex and they got Mercedes, and now uplifting iPromise into that. You don't have Mercedes budget from my understanding.
No.
So
you know, a little bit less.
A little bit less. Aspirations.
Yes.
But talk about what we did with influencer there and how you think it affected the business.
Sure. So if you recall, you know, like we had an integrated media plan, right? And mm-hmm. so the influencer was a piece of a plan that had to work really hard. Like it had, I mean, it had to drive awareness for a category that dedicated golfers largely didn't know, for a mm-hmm. problem they largely didn't know they had, and a brand that could be that solution. And so the campaign had to work really hard, and the influencer component was a piece of it, and its role was primarily engagement. But then, you know, we wanted there to be a conversion component, which again is a little bit challenging. And you know, with a company of our size and a marketing budget of our size, we had to be creative. And how we engaged influencers. You know, for us and the Koya team did a great job with the entire campaign, but then specifically with influencers, we worked really hard to get to an influencer that we felt could be an extension of the brand, if you will. You know, we went with a micro influencer versus a regular influencer, mm-hmm. which I think was a great fit for us for a number of different reasons. You know, like one, certainly budgets are a consideration, but then, you know, put that aside for a second. For us, like we wanted an influencer who had a fit with our brand, like so there was brand congruency, mm-hmm. but then also had an authentic voice and was willing to work with us because we had tall tasks for him to achieve. And so mm-hmm. He was really flexible in that. But then and he also had, you know, he had two, I think a comment that you had made earlier, he had a strong following, you know, across our targeted social media platforms, but they were super engaged. So, you know, higher quality, if you will, less scale, but higher quality, yeah. which is what we were looking for. So
it's not followers, it's the engagement
yeah.
with those followers, yeah. right? I was kind of the guinea pig on the target audience since I'm...
Yes, you are a little bit like a dedicated golfer.
Yes, yeah. I fit certain aspects of the profile. And Gabe actually had turned me on to the Garmin watch, which I have on right
really?
Now. Yeah, so this is...
Was it in the annual buying guide?
So this not only was in the annual buying guide, it was right before...
Yeah, yeah.
I promise this placement. I'm like, well, there's two products that I use...
That is
right
awesome.
There from Gabe.
Awesome.
So he came up when I was researching this.
Yeah.
And then fit on the annual buying guide. So I was like, that literally shows how perfect at least this audience of
yes.
one was
yes.
to the target. So
yeah. I mean, he was again, he was part of a larger campaign that had to work really hard.
Yeah.
But that component, you know, in terms of driving engagement, we had an offer because it's Black Friday. And,
yep.
you know, like that consumer mindsets during Black Friday are very geared towards discounts and, you know, how do
oh,
I
yeah.
get the best offer? And
yeah.
so including that, like we had fairly strong pull through. We had, I think, if I remember correctly, you know, specific to that influencer, the results were in line with benchmarks. The conversion was higher than we anticipated, so it was good. It was supposed to be earlier in the campaign.
It was.
And so it was supposed to, you know, from a flight perspective, it was supposed to be kind of like right at the top with all the other awareness tactics that we executed
mm-hmm.
on. And, you know, credit to the Koegi team, like, we wanted to get it right, and so it just didn't work out timing-wise with,
mm-hmm.
you know, activating it at the outset because we didn't find the right influencers. And so, you know, when we were able to execute, we were very conversion focused, if you recall. And so Gabe was great at flexing to add in a promotional offer, include us in his annual buying guide. And so, you know, like it wasn't the way it was planned on
mm-hmm.
paper. But it worked out overall pretty well because at the time we were, you know, towards the back end of the campaign, we were very focused on conversion. And he, you know, one, he helped fill the funnel during a time frame where people are very much in buying mode.
Yeah.
And he was able to complement those larger efforts.
You have to be nimble and flexible in this industry. So being
100%.
Being able to flex to that, something that I'm glad we were able to do for you. So that kind of takes us to our next topic, and that's, and we started talking about this, the client-agency relationship, something I'm obsessed with as agency executive.
Yeah, you should be, yes.
It's my job.
Yeah.
What aspects do you think are most important in any client-agency relationship? What things do you look for when you're looking at partners? And what are some call-outs that you could tell the audience of maybe red flags for partnerships that haven't worked too?
Agency client relationships. I mean, I really have been fortunate in working with a number of great agencies, some of the world's largest agencies over my tenure. Like if I think about, you know, those relationships, and I would certainly include our relationship with Koegi as part of that. You know, I think they're just, you know, they're founded on on mutual respect,
mm-hmm.
And an agreement that rewards on both sides of that, honestly, really and truly. And then all the things that come underneath that, you know, open communication, holding each other accountable, mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure, and I've never worked on the agency side, I've always worked on the brand side, like, it's tough, I'm sure, to be on the agency side and not always know the conversations that are happening on the other side, and then all of a sudden you get handed down some decision, or you're told we're taking a hard left,
mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I hope I've done a good job, you know, in working with Coigy and working with other agency partners over the years in being transparent. And I think the more that on the brand side we can do that and be true partners, like the more agencies are positioned, the better positioned agencies are to help us through whatever the challenges are.
Yeah.
I mean, when I think about, you know, looking at new agencies, there's, I think all of the, I guess I'll say normal stuff, if you will. So like when we went through the process, just to provide a little bit of context, you may or may not remember this. When I joined, we had a digital strategist on the team. but, you know, he had come from an agency, had been with us for maybe three to five years, something like that. And space is really dynamic. Like the digital landscape.
3 to 5 years really, is 30 to 50
yeah,
years.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lifetime. And so, you know, we were very tactical. We didn't have that connective tissue and weren't wired into, you know, like what's happening in this landscape, like how are things changing, you know, and very things like algorithm changes, whether they be mm-hmm. Google, whether they be Amazon, like they're meaningful if you don't know about them and can't plan for them and aren't right. in front of them. And so we decided we were going to partner with a digital media agency. And so, you know, like when I think of the normal stuff that I would look at, it was obviously needs to have a full digital offering, if you will, be able to bring all of that to bear, because as we grow and scale, you know, I want to be able to tap into different things. So, you know, full service digital media agency. For us, you know, it was important for the agency to be able to have demonstrated success in like healthcare products. If it was supplements, awesome, but it wasn't, you know, I knew that was going to be challenging.
There's not too many supplement focused agencies
yes.
that I know of. There's probably
well,
one
demonstrated
out there,
success
yes.
with supplements specifically.
Yes. Yeah.
That was a plus. Demonstrated success in DTC, demonstrated yeah. success with Amazon. And then as we went through the process, it became more about the intangibles, you know, the team, the communication, the collaboration, like, is it a good fit?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think of all of those things as the normal things, but I mean, it is a process and a mm-hmm. journey. And I think it's important to kind of go through that process, and then to like afterwards to continue to hold each other accountable by taking that time out and like, how are we doing as an agency mm-hmm. partner? You know, what could be better? And that's on both sides. I mean, I remember, working with agency partners, and I'm sure we've done this too. But I remember being in a business supplier review, and the agency, you know, us talking about hours in a certain area just mm-hmm. being astronomical, and they're like, well, you guys have 15 rounds of edits. So when yep. you have 15 rounds of edits, and we budget for two. And so, you know, like having a dialogue mm-hmm. around like, how do we consolidate that? How do we streamline that? And, you know, like whether that's through one voice feedback or like, what are those mechanisms that we put in place so that, you know, we're doing right, you guys are doing right, and we're holding each other accountable.
Mm-hmm. Accountability and trust are
yeah.
incredibly important, right? That's the bedrock of any strong relationship, period, but certainly
yeah.
in agency client relationship. I think sometimes agency folks don't always know the best way to hold the client accountable. It feels like.
Are you telling me something?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm not. We can bring Zoe in here. Maybe she can. But I'm not on the day to day, so this is not. There's no hidden agenda with anything.
That would be great.
If there is, and it's just happenstance, I promise. But it, because the client agency relationship, a lot of times the client is ordering the agency to do a task, right? Like that's the normal workflow. Yeah. But you're saying, and a lot of clients say, well, we need to be held accountable too. What's the best way to, for your agency account folks to have tough conversations and to hold the client accountable to either the business goals that they set out? Or, you know, sometimes probably the person who's calling the shots isn't always the person that we're talking to either, right? The silent clients is something I've been talking about a little bit more recently on trying to figure out what the board of directors that we're never going to talk to, right, is actually thinking what they care about, right? And this came up pretty directly with Solo Stove. With Snoop's Dogg thing, right? Where their marketing team thought that they had hit it out of the park, but somebody else didn't. So there's this, sometimes there's even a disconnect, I think, between internally too. So that makes it really hard for the agency to navigate. So I'm, again, asking like three questions in one. So I'll start with the first question. How do agencies also hold their client accountable appropriately?
I mean, where I've seen it happen best is it happens up front. So like we're proactively having those conversations and setting up those expectations up front. And then when we, in instances where I've worked with agencies where we tether it to, you know, an agreement.
Like in the contract.
The contract, like it, I mean, it holds water. Setting it up front is the easiest way to do it because it's clean, right? But even when it's, it doesn't happen there, like I would hope that like I have a strong enough relationship with any agency partner that if things were going off the rails and things were not going well, that the agency director, the account director would feel comfortable in having that conversation with me. And if, you know, if it's a good client, partner relationship, like you should be able to have that conversation. I know I've had that conversation before. So
I've had the conversation with you once or twice.
And so like that, I mean, when I think about good partnerships, you know, trust and mutual respect, like part of that is being able to call somebody to the carpet because, you know, because at the end of the day, we oftentimes, you know, the person that you talk to, you talk about the silent,
The silent client.
The silent client. Like there's always a silent client, right? There's always a silent client. And so the things that the silent client, wow, that's a mouthful. Silent client.
It was supposed to have alliteration and rhyming.
It does, but it's a tongue twister too for me today, apparently. The silent client says, isn't in our control. And so again, like when you have a strong agency partnership, you know, you should be able to have some of that dialogue that like at the end of the day, sometimes it's
out of our control.
It's out of our control.
Sometimes so it's out of the business's control too, right? Yeah. There's something that happens in the environment with consumers or something, a PR disaster happens or you go viral on something that you weren't expecting, right?
Yeah, there's, I mean, tons of brand instances like that.
I was listening to a podcast talking about Stanley Cup, which is,
you know. That's actually the brand that came to mind.
Where and this is a very general podcast, something that The Atlantic was talking about. So this wasn't a marketing podcast. And they were saying that a lot of that was luck. It was not necessarily this marketing brilliance, but this tidal wave happens that you don't expect too. So
I think that's why it was great. It was organic.
Yes.
It was authentic.
Yes. And a lot of our success and failures as marketers is because of the market. Not necessarily because of what we do. We don't own our brand. We, you know, the consumers own the brand
Yes.
more so today than they ever have.
100%.
So we can try to steer the brand in certain ways, and we do have more agency over the aspects of the brand, but we don't own the brand anymore, right? So it's, you know, it's not just the silent client. It's also the loud consumer who
I mean,
can
they vote with
move.
reviews. They vote. I mean, there's the consumer has carries a lot more weight today than they ever have.
They have the same voice, the same 140 characters that the brand account does, and a lot of times mean a lot more too. So.
I mean, and I, part of me thinks of my market research hat and my research days, and like that's an N of one. Why does that matter? But like, it when I take myself out of my marketing hat, I think about just me, the consumer who's looking for something. I look at reviews, and if there's an overly negative review, and they've detailed it out, like it is, it's an N of one, but it carries more weight than you would think of if you think about it through an academic lens, if you
You need
will.
20 good reviews to negate one bad review someone's saying out there,
Yeah.
right? Those are
I think it's
funny
actually, I think
numbers a
it's
little
like
bit.
50.
So it's important to have well, every interaction, every touch point, and that's advertising touch points,
Customer service touch points,
that's the
that's.
website, that is the product itself, and word of mouth that happens that is completely out of our control.
I have control issues though, so. I mean, I say that, and I because at the end of the day, and I truly believe this, like every interaction that a consumer has with our brand either builds it or detracts from it. And
Does.
so there's, to your point, there's some of it that is out of my control, but to the degree that as marketers we can control or plan for, like that's our job.
This is a linchpin year, in my opinion, for a lot that's happening in digital marketing. This is the year that the cookieless future that we've been pontificating about for the last 5 years is actually coming to fruition. There's a major election I hear in the United States that seems to be dominating a lot of attention. There's the Olympics that everybody likes to talk about. CPM is going up, and we have a point of view on that if you reach
Oh,
out to your
interesting.
account director. Well, happy to send over. But there's a lot that's happening within e-commerce in particular as well. Love to hear what you're focused on at I Promise, as it pertains to this year and beyond, to ensure that you're maintaining as much control over all of those touch points that you're talking about. Where do you see the landscape changing?
I mean, beyond what we're doing at I Promise, although, right, you always have to have an eye towards that and be thinking about how and when does that kind of fold into your business. Certainly AI is going to be is con going to continue to be a thing. I think it's going to find application in every corner of business. How it manifests in marketing and with agencies, I think we're going to spend 24 figuring it out, because I think like a lot of pendulums, right? Like I think it's going to swing really hard and people are like, we don't need people anymore and everything, and that'll swing back. We'll figure that piece
Think it's
out.
already swinging back a little bit. You can sniff out a piece that's pretty AI content heavy versus what's maybe slightly AI inspired, but has legitimate copy with it. I mean, I see it at least pretty obviously, and I'm seeing a lot more comments calling out, hey, did you just put this into Bard, or did Claude write this for you, or right? Like, so there's almost this, you're seeing that kickback happen a little faster than I would have
I
expected.
think it's because consumers, and it's the same thing with influencers, and while we didn't have the budget to go after big influencers, I think consumers want authenticity. I think they want human interaction, whether that and so if an interaction with a brand is the brand's voice to the consumer, they don't want it to be computer generated.
That's correct.
Like it's one thing to kind
unless
of
they're
have a framework.
computers that you're interacting with, right? Like you're buying a computer, maybe that's one thing, but
maybe. But maybe. I mean, at the end of the day, like, do I think we're going to get to a point where AI can fully reflect the brand, the tone, the inflection, the, you know, the emotive aspects that make humans unique? No, I don't think AI will get there, but I do think AI will continue to be huge. Let's see here. Second, probably social commerce.
Mm-hmm.
We did that.
Yep.
We did a fair bit of that. We had success with that. I think a lot of brands, I think, you know, the social media platforms are figuring out how to monetize their platforms.
Yeah.
And, you know, that inventory, especially, you know, with the demographics that tend to be on those platforms and their buying power increasing and all of that stuff. Like, I think it creates a perfect ecosystem for brands to come in and play. So, you know, we did that last year. I think we're going to do some of that again this year.
Lean into
I think it's
going
to continue to become an area of growth.
Going back to the AI piece a little bit, it's funny that was a headline for the past 6 months when artificial intelligence has been
around.
It has been behind a number of digital marketing efforts since Coega's existence. Programmatic buying is artificial intelligence. Paid search is artificial intelligence. I mean, it is, right?
Like, I can see that.
The computers are machine learning, maybe, right? But there was certainly optimization that was happening on its own to try to move a campaign towards a goal.
Right.
That's learning, right?
Yeah.
Like,
that's fair.
Maybe it wasn't a generalized artificial intelligence. That's
right.
I
think it's just more, it's gone mainstream.
Yes.
It's gone mainstream.
Yes.
But we, you know, in going mainstream, I don't think we figured out how to truly harness it yet. Certainly,
correct.
You know, at a mainstream level, but then like, how does it come to life in supply chain? How does it come to life in lots and lots of different capacities?
Yeah, it's something that we're going to have to continue to keep our eye on and very focused and lean into.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, of course.
Right.
Of course,
okay.
Yeah.
You a question?
We can have another hour of you asking me.
Does Coega, like, how does Coega think about it? And have you guys given thought to, like, how does AI, beyond kind of the way it comes to life for you today in programmatic and all of that, like, mainstream AI, do you see that playing a larger role, maybe in 24, maybe 25?
I think it's already is.
Okay.
But I don't think it needs to be an AI product. It needs to just start to infuse into the work that we do. When we write content, we're definitely using AI to help us with research, to help edit, to help with copywriting. In fact, we're starting to build out little AI chatbots that could represent our client. So that if
there could be a chatbot that was two.
There could be a two chatbot. We could create you if you would allow us to. I think it'd be a fun experiment to talk through, so that we could get a reaction to a new idea, or the way that we phrase an email, or the way that that we interact with you, to help train our staff to be able to have more meaningful conversations, right? Or to create a chatbot of me, so that you could start to,
like, my chatbot would talk to your chatbot.
I don't want to necessarily get there yet, but and we're investing technology that will allow, because prompt engineering is really important, right? Podcast I was listening to said that AI is like having 1,000 interns.
And that's interesting.
And having 1,000 interns is very powerful, but you got to tell an intern pretty specifically what you need them to do. So I've had a lot more success with having deeper prompt engineering, with really playing with the prompts to make sure that they know that the AI knows exactly what persona that I'm looking for, what tone, how I want the output to look.
Yeah.
Does it need to be in lists, and then to really focus on, I'm tell me what sources you used for
Yeah.
for this, dive deeper into the subject, right? So having
Interesting.
ongoing conversation, we're starting to be able to share those prompts with throughout teams, so that we're using all of the same prompts when we find ones that are actually going deeper and not just giving the surface level Wikipedia type response.
That's super cool.
So those are a number of ways that we're using it, but I don't want it to be a product on its own. We're not
Yeah.
going to be
No.
an agency that suddenly has a AI consulting arm, like a couple agencies
Oh.
that did a week after. And I'm
Really?
like, how can you be an expert in this?
Yeah,
An
that's.
agency that's going to go unnamed,
Yes.
that you suddenly feel like you can charge $500 an hour for consulting on a product that was a week old. That's silly,
That's
right?
bananas.
It is bananas. But it's something that will get infused. But to your point, there's nothing today, in particular with regulated industries. You guys are half somewhat
Somewhat.
regulated. Toega works a lot of re regulated industries. We got to be real careful what we upload into that, right?
Oh,
We have to be
yeah.
very sensitive with our consumers' data, our
Yeah.
clients' data, their
Yeah.
clients' data. So it's not game time ready for that by any means. There will be a human element
I think there'll
to
always
all
be a
of it.
human element. I think about, I think about, all of the hype around robots replacing people in various capacities, in the last
We've talked
five,
about
ten
that for a
years.
while, yeah.
Yeah. And, whether it was like pharmacists are going to be done because we're going to have robots there, and Lowe's and Home Depot are going to have robots do everything,
Even Amazon that ha does
oh yeah.
have interactions with robots or assembly lines with cars that have
Yeah. Which has been
have a
around
lot of
for a really long time
yeah,
as
for
well.
40 years probably. Another place where I do think that there's tangible benefit is in a lot of the manual low value tasks that are more data entry, and there's a number of that. I mean, we're managing several hundred clients concurrently, right? So we need to make sure that our naming conventions are straight, that invoicing and billing is going out. So there is manual entry of each campaign on there. I think there's automation that can happen with that. Nobody likes doing those tasks. So
Somebody likes doing those tasks. There are people who
there
like
are.
doing those tasks.
We would, there's better value probably
Yes, 100%.
out there. So to wrap up, thank you
Yeah,
for
thank you for
coming
having
on.
me.
I know you said your voice sounds deep. I think you sounded great. So we'd love to have you back whenever you want, and we can part two this
That would be
later in the
fun.
year.
Mid-year
Yeah,
at Topgolf.
at Topgolf, we can definitely bring at least the mobile video camera. I'm happy to do that.
I don't want my swing to be taped. I'm
You
not gonna,
don't?
no.
Even just to be released internally at
No,
iPromise?
Ryan.
No? In particular, not to be released internally?
Think I've shared with you when I went to grad school, I was a research, I was a scientist, and so I was like, well, everyone in business has to golf. Like, that's part of being in business. I need to get some
You need to
lessons.
golf, yeah.
I quit after lesson two. I bought a six pack. And after the second lesson, I was like, you can keep the money. I'm done. This is terrible.
It's all in the hips. That's
is.
you've watched Happy Gilmore before. It's all in the hips.
Well, and my husband can golf. And when he talks about it is fascinating to me, kind of. In that swing, the sequence of things that need to happen across your body in order for you to hit the ball, strike the ball in the way that you want to. I mean, it's like contortionist type stuff.
It is a
It's
little bit. It's I think compared a little bit to pitching a baseball,
you
because
think?
baseball
Probably.
starts with the wind up that
Yeah,
really
it's in
center
your
the legs,
legs.
then there's rotation, and then there's an arm movement and an accuracy component of timing of when to release. So there's several functions
There
that are
is.
happening in the sequenced in order.
I think what's different to me about golf is in pitching, which I think I'm a bit youth baseball mom.
Yeah.
There's a lot of youth baseball in my life. I have pitchers.
You love the Cardinals. You don't have the Cardinals hat on today,
but
we're not quite in Cardinal season yet.
Not quite. And I'm hoping that before we get into the season, we have one more acquisition.
That would be nice.
That would be lovely.
Yeah. Another 15 minutes, we can talk about the Cardinals.
Yes. But in pitching versus that swing, in pitching, there's movement. There's a sequence of events that needs to happen almost from like the bottom up. If you will. But it's kind of full body, and to me, there's more separation versus in the swing. There's a lot of connectivity, like in a very small kind of a smaller range, if you will, which is why it to me is so much more impressive.
The golf swing definitely starts with the ground.
It does
much more than you would think. And the long hitters, and even the kind of golf workouts that I do now.
Oh, you there's do a golf workouts?
Oh, yeah, I know.
I'm sorry.
If you come to Lifetime Fitness in Frontenac, you can see me doing my deadlift, trying to pull the from the ground up. There's a lot of, like, legs probably have 60% of the swing. Your back and
really?
Twist and abs do too, and core. But strong legs are probably primary.
No,
you got to have it is. I'll show you some mechanics.
At Top Golf in July when we do part two.
Yeah, you'll see the and you're moving the weight from your left foot to the right and then back to the left. So you're almost like pushing down.
Really?
If you want to really
see, this is why I quit. This is why I quit.
I don't know if this will end up.
It's a wrap.
I don't know if this will make it in, but two, thank you so much. This has been fantastic. We could talk for hours, which I knew was going to happen. So,
thank you for having me.
Yeah,
I was happy to do it, and I'm excited to do it again.
We'll do it soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Kwegi is an industry-leading performance marketing agency based in the Midwest. We've learned a lot since our founding in 2014 and started the Loop Marketing Podcast to share some of our hot takes on marketing trends we're following, best practices we've discovered, and actionable tips for improving your digital strategy. We'll see you next time.